is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The meeting in Moscow, now concluded between the General Secretary and President of the People's Republic of China, Xi Jinping, and the President of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin. We have this statement from Vladimir Putin's office. Agreement reached, in quotes, on Power of Siberia 2 gas pipeline. That is energy. I learn, however, that that's only one piece of the Russian economy that is adjusting to post-February 22 conditions for trade. I welcome Ekaterina Zolotova of Geopolitical Future. She is in Moscow to take us through what was, what is, and what can be for Russia's trade, its foreign policy, and repositioning Russia with its partner China for the immediate future, perhaps indefinite future. Ekaterina, thank you very much. We begin with what was. What was a heavy concentration, as you report, of trade with the EU, 33%, and Asia-Pacific, 33%. This is prior to the war. That has all changed, as I understand it, and we're going to get into details. That changed. Was it anticipated? Were the markets prepared for it, or was it a jolt to them, Ekaterina? Good evening to you.
Good evening. And that's a very good question. I don't think that the markets were really prepared for this. In fact, from the very beginning, no one knows how long this military operation will last, and no one expected such heavy sanctions that were imposed into Russian economy. But anyhow, it was a surprise for many experts and organizations, including even Russian organizations, that Russia could withstand the sanctions. And in fact, it showed quite good results for the last year. For example, during the whole year, Russia didn't publish any information about its exports and imports. And this month, the first time Russia decided to publish these numbers, the first time since the beginning of the military operation. And it appeared that export was doing quite well. Exports increased by 20%. Of course, import a little bit declined also, because of the different sanctions and the logistical problems. But in fact, Russia could continue to export to get the currency into its economy, to get the profit, and so on. And the most interesting thing that the Russian economy didn't drop so significantly. A lot of companies started to adapt, starting to try Russian market and trying to find its own niche. And this is why the numbers of decline were quite modest and even better than it was forecasted.
Yes, the numbers are surprisingly better than expected. However, you report that Russia has since the conflict is upon us, a new plan. And it's a five-year plan, which is sentimental of them, the five-year plans of the Soviet era. The five-year plans begin with sanctions, the sanction regime. And the traders, the Moscow traders, the traders across Russia have found intermediaries. I came across this remark the other day by someone commenting on the EU and sanctions, saying that it is an open secret in the EU that Russia avoids the severity of the sanctions by using Yerevan, the capital of Armenia, and Nur-Sultan, the capital of Kazakhstan. You list other countries where Russia has increased its trade 48%. Belarus, Kazakhstan, I've mentioned, but Georgia, Uzbekistan. And the question here is that sustainable, that workaround? Is it understood that that can go on for the long term?
Well, first of all, there are two types of these countries. The first one, it's the members of post-Soviet world. And Russia expects that the trade with these countries will increase and the trade will be sustainable. It's one of the Russian imperatives to increase its own presence in that area. And there is also the second type of these countries that are acting as mediators or transit zone. They are situated a little bit far from this area. It's, for example, the Arab countries like the Emirates and Turkey, especially. These countries face a lot of pressure, especially from the West. The latest example was Turkey. Because of the threat of the secondary sanctions and the pressure from the West, Turkey has suspended some re-export to Russia of some goods from the United States and Canada. It is still continued to export the goods from Europe countries, but anyhow, Russia understands that this direction can't be very sustainable simply because there is so much pressure from other countries. Russia would like to keep the relations, at least to keep this corridor for the goods, especially from Europe and the United States and Canada and other developed countries, until it creates its own system of import substitution. It will take time. It will take a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of investments into this area. Some experts expect about like 3-5 years for different sectors. So the major task for Russian government right now is to keep these transition zones and to keep the trade with the countries in the post-Soviet world and some other countries that play a very important role right now in the trade, like Turkey, for example.
If I understand correctly, the chief concern here is to maintain access to machinery and high-tech developments outside of the sanctions regime, and that is what these third-party countries have been able to do so far. You say the former Soviet sphere, that would be Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Georgia. And do you expect that access to be maintained? For example, you know, there's going to be an iPhone 15. Do you expect that there will be access through one of those capitals?
Oh, yeah, I believe that it will be a success. Well, you're absolutely correct. Russia is very dependent on technological issues, especially from Europe. And it will be very difficult to diversify this dependence. Right now, the dependence is really high. It's about like 45% of all electronics come from Europe and the sanctioned countries. Talking about iPhone, of course, I expect that Russia is going to have and it's going to see the iPhone 15. The parallel import brings the goods to the Russian Federation, but we don't need to forget that it brings also a lot of money to the countries that participate in the transit. This area, the post-Soviet area and the Caucasus countries, are characterized by still developing and sometimes not very stable economy. And for them to have this access to additional market and additional way to get the money to the budget, it's really profitable and it's really great for its economy. Right now, for example, Armenia and Georgia are getting a lot of profit simply because there are a lot of Russian Russian population who decided to escape from the mobilization or decided to leave the country for different reasons. And they have increased the economy by very significant percentage when the rest of the world was seeing the decline of its GDP.
A detail, you mentioned the young people who've gone to Yerevan and Nur-Sultan. I believe we touched on that the last time, about the outburst of new businesses in Yerevan. And you're reporting that that's true in all of these capitals being used as third parties in Tashkent, in Yerevan, in Minsk, in Tbilisi. Are we seeing the same business formation?
Minsk, not because Belarus, it's also under the sanctions.
I see.
Yes, we see the formation in Yerevan mostly because it is easy there, and and Armenia is also part of the Eurasian Economic Union, so it's the customs union where there is Russia, there is Armenia and the transportation of goods, it's easy. I see also some projects appearing in Georgia as well, because people also decided to stay in Georgia and they tried to register them. And we can't say that there is the same tendency in the Central Asian countries, simply because Russian citizens prefer to go to Caucasus and, for example, Turkey and other countries. Central Asia, it's still far, especially for the people who live in Moscow, for example, or St. Petersburg, the major centers right. of population in Russia. So there are migrants for sure, but we see less volume of the activity, the end less yeah. activity.
As for exports, fossil fuels, I started with the announcement from Moscow about the Power of Siberia 2 gas pipeline from Russia to China. But you feature the fact that refined oil, all of a sudden, which is forbidden in some parts of Europe, in some parts of the world, chiefly Europe, you've now seen the refined oil flowing exceptionally to North Africa. I believe all of North Africa is taking what it can, and that is a development. There's also the question of sanctions at sea. I've reported on this, thanks to Bloomberg, of two tankers, a small tanker and a large tanker, meeting and mixing their oil and then taking crude oil and then taking it to a refinery. So the surprise is that while the sanctions have damaged the profit margin somewhat, it hasn't stopped the flow of oil. Is that correct? Is that what you see? The oil is still flowing out of Russia.
Yes, exactly. And every day we're receiving new information about this. For example, today there was an article in different media in Russian and foreign media in English language that the Emirates are receiving Russian oil, and especially in March, they received a lot of Russian oil, which is going to be sent to Europe then. There are also a lot of examples how India is buying much oil for its own usage and also send some oil, mix it and send some oil to Europe as well. North Africa is doing the same. There are some information about Tunisia, for example, Algeria, that they are buying oil, they are consuming some of this goods, and they also resend it to Europe as well. All what we see shows to us that Europe still is receiving Russian oil. We don't know exactly how it is happening. We can't see the exact chain, how the oil is going. But through different transit countries, it is still coming to European market. And this is the importance of these transit countries. This is why Russia needs the transit countries that will help to not only to import goods, but export goods. And we don't need to forget that Europe is still trying to diversify its oil imports from Russia. But unfortunately, it usually takes much more time and much more forces. So Europe is also interested in having these transit countries that will supply the area with Russian oil until they are trying to diversify their resources.
I'm speaking with Ekaterina Zolotova. She is an analyst for geopolitical future. She's in Moscow. And we've been speaking about the imports of high tech in particular, but machinery parts, and the exports of fossil fuels. When we come back, Ekaterina points to questions to be answered about Russia's new foreign policy in a post-Ukraine war world. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.